Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from a very, very windy Mile High City. We are right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single weekday and we talk sports. We try to bring you a common sense approach to the world of sports. And it's kind of funny, as you look around the sports media world, yeah, it's a sports media world that desperately needs a common sense approach to the world of sports, isn't it? We are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Wednesday to you. We are getting through yet another week. We somehow survived Monday. That's pretty good, right? We somehow survived tax day yesterday. Hey, that's a pretty big week already. Like, we already managed those two obstacles. If we can handle those two things, yeah, we can probably make our way through the rest of this, can't we? We are plowing through another week here at the Daily Dose. Hey, if you would like to let us know when you expect to receive your official IRS audit notice, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. You know, maybe you do want to let us know when the IRS is going to be knocking at your door. Maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you've got a suggestion. Maybe you need a little bit of advice. Let us know what you have on your mind. We'd love to hear from you. Today on the show, you know, we do have a couple of news stories coming out that I want to discuss, including one that's pretty interesting, a little bit weird one coming out today. And you might not realize it, but today, April 18th, is actually a day to remember a group of people that, hey, they don't get much recognition. Gonna have to recognize them today, though. And as we do on most Wednesdays, we will have our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings.
Hump Day!
You never know what we might be ranking, but we will be ranking something today. You're gonna want to make sure that you stick around for a little bit later in the show. Couple things coming out in the world of breaking news. A little bit of an odd story coming out in the world of college football. Tallahassee police apparently conducted some surveillance on Florida State quarterback DeAndre Francois. This surveillance went on for about 2 months, operating on a tip that Francois was selling marijuana. But apparently it seems that a raid of Francois's apartment last week yielded less than an ounce of marijuana, the Orlando Sentinel reported. Now, Francois, who is recuperating from a torn patellar tendon in his left knee, he was not arrested. He was charged with misdemeanor possession and given the chance to enter a pretrial diversion program as well as pay a fine. According to the newspaper, Francois told police the marijuana that they did find actually belonged to his girlfriend, and that the last time he used marijuana, that was clear back in December of 2017. So apparently, Tallahassee Police Department wasted a bunch of time following this quarterback around for 2 months over less than an ounce of marijuana. Now, I hate to ask this. I swear I do. I promise. I hate to ask this, but I feel like I should. Should I ask this? I feel like I need to. Okay, I think I've got to ask this question. Where in the world was all of this surveillance back when Jameis Winston was at Florida State? This guy has a SWAT team in like an unmarked van following him throughout his neighborhood with like satellite dishes and the whole thing over less than an ounce of weed. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston was down in Tallahassee stealing crab legs, doing God knows what to co-eds at Florida State, and the Tallahassee cops, they couldn't even be bothered to even report the incidents, let alone like trail him or keep an eye on him. They didn't even report him. They weren't even paying attention to the incidents. What in the world is the difference here? How did they have the time to follow this kid around, but they couldn't devote any time to following Jameis around? He was actually doing things, actually getting into some trouble. What is the difference there? I don't understand. Oh, wait, that's right. Florida State was winning under Jameis. You know what? That's my bad. That's completely my bad. Totally forgot the most obvious answer. Jameis actually had Florida State winning. That's why he wasn't getting bothered. My mistake. I withdraw my complaint. Did you see this story in the NFL? Apparently, Buffalo Bills safety Micah Hyde, he's got an idea. He's got a pretty good idea. He has a solution, he thinks, to curb the number of dangerous hits that wide receivers are taking over the middle of the field. Now, when we look at these dangerous hits, everybody kind of looks at these things. You say, hey, these guys are going over the middle. They catch the ball, or they try to catch the ball. The defensive back hits them. We fine the defensive back. We suspend the defensive back. We penalize the defensive back. There is even talk that maybe the NFL might institute a targeting penalty. The defensive backs could be ejected, whatever it might be. But Micah Hyde, he's been thinking about this. He's got a better idea for those kind of plays. Here is Micah Hyde's solution to this whole thing. He's got it figured out, I'm telling you. Smart guy, Micah Hyde. Those bang-bang plays, he says, it's tough. But what they need to do is start finding the quarterbacks. They're the ones who are throwing the ball right there. Hey, it's tough for us defensive players to be able to adjust last second to get our head to one side or the other side to go up or to go down. We're trying to make a play just like the receiver is. It's the sport of football. Hey, I see you working, Mr. Hyde. I do. Let's find the quarterbacks. Let's blame it on the quarterbacks. Here's the problem with doing that. Well, there's a number of problems with doing that. Like, there's a plethora of problems that would come from doing that. But here's the biggest problem that I see. When you look around at the NFL, how many good quarterbacks are there? Not very many. If you're going to find them every time they throw a bad pass, how do you expect these quarterbacks to eat? How do you expect these quarterbacks to make a living? Are you kidding me? Are you seriously gonna start finding the Brock Osweilers, the Jay Cutlers, the Ryan Tannehills of the world? They aren't going to be able to eat. They're not going to be able to get a paycheck if you're going to find them every time they throw a bad pass. That's going to be biting off a lot of money. I'll tell you what, Micah Hyde, you know, he kind of strikes me. We ought to get this guy in politics. Like, that kind of logic, that kind of thinking, instead of just going to the source, like going kind of a backhanded way all the way around to a different area, like, that is kind of political genius right there. Micah Hyde for president, I would say. He's got that kind of style. He's got that kind of wit. That's the kind of genius that could run this country, you know, directly into the ground. That is a smart, smart guy, that Micah Hyde. I like his thinking. Now, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about taxes, about income, you know, a number of top paid athletes, how much it is that they have to pay. And it kind of makes things, in a way, a little more relatable, doesn't it? Like, you look at athletes a little different. You look at them and say, hey, made $1 million or whatever, but I mean, the government takes $400K. You know, they're dealing with real problems. Yes, it's more money, but it does make it a little bit more relatable, I think. Well, a story came out yesterday about some other professional athletes, and it also revolved around money. And I kind of want to discuss it for a second, okay? I got this story from Big Rob, who does contribute a lot of things here to the Dose. He sends me some good stuff, sends me some interesting stories. But here's a story coming out right now that I want to talk about. Candace Parker, who you might be familiar with, she's a two-time WNBA MVP with the Los Angeles Sparks. She married, you might remember this, former Duke basketball player Sheldon Williams back in 2008. Do you remember those two? They got married? Well, 2 years ago, apparently, the couple split up. I know. It's a sad state of affairs. You know, sometimes these things just don't work out. You always kind of hope that they will, but sometimes they don't. But that's not the story. According to TMZ, Candace Parker has agreed to pay a one-time alimony payment to settle claims of alimony by Williams as part of the divorce.
What?
The two apparently are going to split custody of their 8-year-old daughter, and neither party is going to be paying future child support, but she is going to give him that one-time alimony payment. Now, here are a few things to think about. First off, Sheldon Williams plays 6 seasons in the NBA. He earned more than $12 million while in the NBA. But Parker, who has been doing studio work for like TNT, during NBA and NCAA tournament games, she is one of the biggest stars in WNBA history. She is a two-time league MVP. Now, according to a study of WNBA salaries done by Summit Hoops, Parker made about $115,000 last season from the Los Angeles Sparks. But there are reports that have placed Candace Parker well over $1 million a year playing overseas. And of course, that doesn't include her TV salary, doesn't include her endorsement deals. So she has a little bit of money. Now here's the thing. For just one second, like try to forget what he made versus what she made, whatever. I just have a couple of questions here. I have a lot of questions here, but I just have a couple of questions. How is another person just going to say, okay, we're getting divorced. You have more money than me. So here's what I'd like. I'd like you to give me some of your money and you take the money and then you give it to me because I was married to you. Like you can go get a job. You can go make the money that she has made, right? You can go make whatever money you want, can't you? She has done that. Why can't Sheldon Williams go do that? But, hold on one second. You know what? I want to blame Sheldon Williams. Like, I want to come down on Sheldon Williams. I want to be like, dude, and I'm not going to play the gender card. Might be tempting. I'm not going to do that. But I just, another human being, you went and got a job and you went and made money and you're doing well. I can go do the same thing if I want to, right? Like, I can't just sit there and say, well, hey, she has more than me and I want some of it, so give me some of it. I'm going to try to avoid that. I'm going to try to sidestep that and not look at that whole disgusting little rabbit hole I could go down. I'm not going to do that. Because you know what? It's going to sound crazy to you. I'm going to blame her for this.
What?
No, I am. I seriously am. I'm going to blame her for this. This is Candace Parker's fault, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why right now. Go look at Candace Parker, okay? You know what Candace Parker looks like? Go look at her, okay, and then go look at Sheldon Williams. Hey, folks, I'm just saying what we're all thinking. I'm just saying what you are thinking right now. I think we all know what happened here, don't we? She thought she would go out with him because he seems, what? Let's say it. He seems like a nice guy, right? Sure, he looks like an alien, or I don't know, a carp with his eyes on either side of his head. Whatever. I'm not going down that path either. I'm just saying that she thought he would be a nice guy. And then eventually, you know, he started to get some confidence. Like, dude, I'm married to Candace Parker. Don't you know who I am? He started to become a player. And now she can't stand him. She tried to do a nice thing, but now she's paying for that nice thing. And here's the thing. I think the moral of the story is, like, make your own money or I don't know. Don't date someone that looks like that or don't date someone from Duke. I don't know. Whatever. I don't really know what the moral of the story is. I don't even know if there is a moral of the story. Maybe you can find it, but I'll bet it's really good if you can find it. If you do find it, make sure you let me know what it is because I don't have any idea. That's one of the more bizarre stories I have heard. Hey, coming back, you might not realize it, but today is actually a very special day. It is a day to reflect on a group of people that rarely ever get recognized. They never get noticed unless they make a mistake. We are going to be recognizing these highly underrated people when we get back. So today, April 18th, is National Lineman Appreciation Day. Yes, as we recognize the brave men and women that actually climb up to dangerous heights and work on power lines. Hey, big props to them. Like, that's an underappreciated job. We take that for granted, don't you? I mean, we just have our lights. We just have our cable. We just have whatever. It all just works. Like, you just hit the switch and it just works. We don't really think about how it works or how it gets power to there. There are some brave people. Climb up on those power lines. Deal with possibly falling. Deal with possibly getting shocked, getting electrocuted. All those things. They climb up on those lines. They deal with it. And the name of the day, it's called National Lineman Appreciation Day. Line person, National Line Person. I don't know, whatever we want to call it. You know, and we don't always recognize those people. Kind of like, you know, the big guys up front that do all the heavy lifting on a football field. It's very similar. We don't notice them until we don't have it anymore. Like you just take it for granted. Hey, you hit the switch, the light comes on. All of a sudden, you don't have good offensive linemen and your quarterback's getting crushed and your running backs are getting hit in the backfield. All of a sudden, you start going, man, you know what? Our offensive line is really awful. They're not very good. You didn't notice all those years and years and years where your quarterback handed off. Your running backs had lanes to run through. Your quarterback dropped back, had a nice little pocket protected, looking downfield, finding the receiver. You took all that stuff for granted, didn't you? Yeah, today on National, whatever, Line Person Appreciation Day, we're going to take a look at some offensive lines that were pretty darn good, because when they are playing well, suddenly your offense is clicking. The running game's working. The passing game's working. And you know what? Even more importantly, your defense is getting rest. You are keeping the opposing offense off the field because of your good offensive line. Now, as we reflect on some great lines in NFL history, I want to just throw this question out to you. Who are the greatest teams in the history of the NFL? Just think about that for a second. Best teams in the history of the NFL. And hey, I haven't really considered this that much. Like, this isn't a definitive list. I suppose I could put one together at some point. I'm not doing like a top five here. I'm just saying, going off the top of my head, here are a few teams that I would think of as being some of the greatest teams ever in the history of the league, okay? First team, at least for me, that would come to mind, I could be talked into some certain things, but the first team that comes to my mind is the 85 Bears. The 1985 Chicago Bears may have been the most dominant team that we've ever seen for one season. And I know it was just one season, but for one season, they dominated the competition. And we all know, they won with that nasty Buddy Ryan defense. And no, I don't know that it could work today. Like, the reason that the teams run the offenses they do today are because of that Buddy Ryan defense. He said, we're going to bring more pass rushers than you have blockers, and we're going to make you eat the football again and again and again. We're going to hit your quarterback until he can't walk anymore. We know how the 85 Bears won, right? That's why we have the spread stuff. That's why you see quarterbacks get rid of the ball very quickly. But when you think of that team, that offense did have to make a few plays that season, right? It wasn't like the defense was scoring every single point. I mean, Jim McMahon made a few plays. Walter Payton rushed for over 1,500 yards. And yes, we know that Sweetness could have done it behind a bunch of nobodies. He did it for years. But the 85 Bears, they had finally put together a decent offensive line. I know they had been awful for years, but with Jimbo Covert, Jay Hilgenberg, Keith Van Horn, that offensive line at least became respectable. And the Bears destroyed their opponents. And that Bears offense kept that defense fresh, ready to go out and just dominate. So while we might think of the 85 Bears as having that great defense, of course, their offensive line contributed a little bit. We don't always think about them though, do we? Now, another team that I would put on my list, I would probably put the 89 San Francisco 49ers somewhere on that list. Not sure exactly where, and these aren't in any specific order, but I would probably put them somewhere. Bill Walsh had put that team together. They were running like a machine, and he left it to George Seifert. The defense was loaded. Charles Haley, Bill Romanowski, Ronnie Lott back at safety, just looking to clean things up. The offense, of course, you had Joe Montana. You had Jerry Rice. You had Roger Craig. You had John Taylor. Those 49ers went 14-2 and averaged nearly 28 points per game. But hey, let's be honest. None of that's possible if they don't have guys like Bubba Paris, if they don't have Guy McIntyre, Jesse Sapolu, and Harris Barton. None of it matters. Put that same offense behind a bad offensive line and watch how quickly they get destroyed. It wouldn't have worked. That offensive line helped that team. We don't think of them. We don't always recognize them. We kind of forget about them. That offensive line changed things. I'll give you another team. What about the 1979 Pittsburgh Steelers? And you know, we could debate this one. Not completely set on this one, because I would be fine with the 75 team too, but I think the 79 team had a little bit more offensive firepower. So I would probably put them here. Now, this team was barely even tested in the postseason. They were winning every single game by an average of like 2 touchdowns in the postseason. When you think of the 79 Pittsburgh Steelers, who do you think of? You think of the Steel Curtain defense, right? Joe Green, Elsie Greenwood, Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, Mel Blunt. And yes, we remember the offensive players. Offensive players are household names. Terry Bradshaw quarterback? Franco Harris? Lynn Swann and John Stallworth? Of course we remember those guys. But again, the Steelers wouldn't have been the same team without Mike Webster, without Steve Corson, Larry Brown, Sam Davis, John Kolb. They wouldn't have been the same team that we remember as being one of the all-time greats. You know, in the history of the NFL, there has been exactly one team that has gone through the entire season without a single blemish. And because of that, you'd probably have to put the 1972 Miami Dolphins, who went 14-0 in the regular season and then finished the year at 17-0 after they won Super Bowl VII. One kind of funny thing when you think back to that 72 Dolphins team, they weren't blowing people out. Like, they were scraping by some tough wins here or there. But they did it. They went all the way through. They didn't have a single loss. But again, what do you think of when you think of that 72 Dolphins team? Well, besides the old geezers that crack open the prune juice every single year after every single team in the NFL has at least one loss. Besides that, because now when you think of the 72 Dolphins, that's what you think of, isn't it? Like, you don't even remember the team. You don't even think back to the games. You just go, oh yeah, you mean the old guys that celebrate every year when everyone finally has their loss? Okay, but besides that, what do you think of when you think of the 72 Dolphins? You think of Bob Greasy? Maybe you think a little of Earl Morrall. He was playing some quarterback for him too. Larry Zonka, Mercury Morris, Paul Warfield. Maybe you think over on the defensive side, Jake Scott, Nick Bunicotti. But the Dolphins ran the ball in 1972 for nearly 3,000 yards. It's pretty good stuff in any era, isn't it? Why were they able to do that? Because of guys like Bob Kuchenberg, Jim Langer, Larry Little, one of the best ever, and Norm Evans. You know, we don't always remember the guys up front. They don't get the recognition of the quarterbacks. You don't look at them and say, oh yeah, it's just like the running back. Let's go talk to him. I want his autograph. They certainly don't get the recognition of their wide receivers. And they're not always, you know, the prima donnas like that. The defense gets more credit than the big guys up front do. But you know, the offensive linemen, they are the group that can make or break your football team. And I know we may look at that and say, well, hey, that's not the case anymore. I mean, now you've got these quarterbacks. You've got the Tom Brady's, just had the Peyton Mannings. You've got a young guy like Carson Wentz. It's not the case anymore. The offensive line isn't as important because now these quarterbacks do. They get the ball out so quickly that it doesn't matter. It's not nearly as important as it used to be back in those days. That's an old era. That's not what it is today. Yeah. Think about the teams right now in the NFL that have the best offensive lines up front. Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah, just coming off Super Bowl. The Atlanta Falcons in the hunt, in the playoffs. The New England Patriots going to Super Bowls. The Tennessee Titans have a very good offensive line. Hey, they're in the playoffs. They won a round. They got through one round. The Los Angeles Rams, another team that is building and that is coming. The game might change. We see different styles. We see different schemes from different coaches, whatever it might be, but it still holds true today. Win the game up front and you're probably going to win the game. And you do not win the game without those underappreciated, unrecognized offensive linemen. Be sure that you thank a lineman when you see them today. Hey, coming back, the NBA playoffs are rolling along. Got games going. Got playoff series getting better, getting tighter. Here is the question that I have to you. Who are the most efficient players in these NBA playoffs right now? We're going to talk about those when we get back. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you've got any shopping to do, you might want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. April's Loot Crate theme is not going to last much longer, but it is called Artifacts, and it features items from Marvel Comics, Lord of the Rings, The Legend of Zelda, and The Dark Crystal. Of course, the best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, make sure you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. And if you heard those franchises, you say they don't interest me, make sure you stop by Loot Crate because they have just about any franchise and any item you can possibly think of. So make sure that you stop by lootcrate.com. Now, like we do every single Wednesday, We like to go through and rank something that is current, like right now. And what I thought we would look at today is the NBA playoffs, of course. They're rolling along. And I wanted to look at who are the most efficient players in the playoffs. And when I started to look at this, it was very, very telling at how these playoffs are kind of going. Now, if you're not sure what efficiency is kind of a rating to measure a player's per minute performance. And they do adjust for minutes played and for pace of the game and all these things. You know, it's one of these goofy metrics, like the baseball saber metrics. And I don't buy into it that much, but it is kind of interesting to see. It takes into account things like, you know, field goals, free throws, three-pointers, assists, rebounds, block steals. It's kind of this all-encompassing stat. Missed shots, turnovers, fouls, everything. And the formula adds positive stats and subtracts negative stats. And then you see how you come out. Now, I have the top six players in the NBA for this season right now. It's kind of interesting to see who comes out at the top six spots right now. At number six, with a 26.05 rating, you have Golden State forward Kevin Durant. It's kind of interesting to see, with the number of minutes that Durant has played, how good his efficiency rating still is. He's had to be playing while a lot of guys around him have been hurt. We've seen Steph, who is still hurt. We've seen Steph miss time. We've seen Draymond Green miss time. We've seen Andre Iguodala miss time. We haven't seen Kevin Durant miss much time, except for, you know, when he's getting suspended or whatever it is he's doing for talking about refs. Other than that, he's playing every single night, and he's got one of the highest ratings in the NBA. He sits at number six. At number five, and this one kind of surprised me a little bit, at number five, we have young Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo at a 27.37. You look at Giannis, what he's done. Is it Giannis or Giannis? I don't know. Whatever it is. Giannis is carrying a team. And that is the one thing that I think I noticed. Most of the players on this list that have the highest efficiency, they are players that are being forced to carry a team that maybe don't have as much surrounding them as some of the other players do. Some of these guys have had to carry the load. Kevin Durant has had to carry a little bit of load. He's at six. Giannis is at number five. He's had to carry that Milwaukee Bucks team. Who comes in at number four? Golden State guard Steph Curry, who until he got hurt was having, and I know he wouldn't get probably recognized for it, he was having an MVP type season because Steph was shooting the ball insanely well before he hurt that knee. Now we got to see if he comes back. But when you look at Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, both in the top six, it's going to be a little bit scary if Steph Curry can come back fully healthy. Both him and Durant on the same team, that's a lot of firepower. Moving up to number three, who else? Cleveland Cavaliers forward LeBron James. Now the interesting part about this, LeBron James is at a 28.65. LeBron is doing so much for the Cavs. Again, he's having to carry the Cavs. I mean, they're making him play point guard. Then he goes and posts up. Then he pops out and shoots the three, whatever it is. Again, here's another guy having to carry his team. He's at a 28.65. At number two, we have a young guy that is carrying his team. New Orleans Pelicans center Anthony Davis is at a 28.98. He is the second most efficient player in the NBA for this season. Anthony Davis trying to carry his team through the playoffs now, trying to see if they can't advance for another round. Anthony Davis doing so many good things for the Pelicans. I don't know how much help he has, but Anthony Davis is carrying his team. So who could the number one most efficient player in the NBA this season be with a 29.87 rating? Yeah, Houston Rockets guard James Harden. Now, you might hear these and you say, okay, well, you've got Antetokounmpo, you've got LeBron, you've got Anthony Davis all trying to carry the team, but you've got Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and James Harden. They're all up there too. What does that tell you? That tells you you better be really, really careful about the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets, because not only do they have three people on this list and people that are playing such highly efficient basketball, but they also have a pretty good supporting cast around them. We might just be watching the battle for third after those two teams, because I'm starting to wonder if Golden State and Houston are just the class of this NBA and everybody else is just hoping to finish somewhere behind them because those two are just so good. Hey, tomorrow on the Daily Dose, we will, of course, be discussing the latest in sports news, see what news stories just might be coming out, And as usual on Thursday, we will have our Daily Dose Overreactions of the Week. You know, with the NBA playoffs starting, we've got a few of those to talk about. I'd say thank you so much for listening to and for sharing the show. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts and the tweets. Hey, if you'd like to contact us, make sure you hit us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And make sure that you don't miss a single episode of the show by subscribing wherever it is that you listen. Just hit that little subscribe or follow button. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Wednesday.